Checkerfin.
Fordham is always in my head.
Checkerfin. Checkerfin.
Yes.
It's the education gadfly
sex,
show.
Sex.
Mike and Rick tell you
early college, high school, pain and suffering,
in your face, in your face, in your face.
Listen to your word that they be preaching, cause here's the education gadfly show. Yeah. It's the education gadfly show.
Hello, this is your host, Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Foundation, here with my co-host, a man who has three hurricanes named after him this season, Rick Hess.
Really?
That's what I understand.
There's three Rick hurricanes?
Yeah, I think there's going to be a Hurricane Frederick.
Ooh.
And then a Hurricane M.
Ooh.
What is it, Michael? A Hurricane Michael.
And a
Hurricane Hess.
There's a Hurricane Hess?
Wouldn't that be great? You know, they should have naming rights for hurricanes.
Dude, that would be...
They actually do that in some places. There was an article about how you can name a storm in Germany or something.
Is that right?
Yeah.
For an amount of money?
Yeah.
I would think you go the other way on this. Like on Katrina, if they had threatened to name it Hurricane ExxonMobil.
Yeah.
And then the question is, how much is it going to cost ExxonMobil not to have its name on that thing?
Right, right.
Louisiana could have cleaned up.
You know, if they did this naming thing, I think we'd see a Hurricane Brode eventually.
But
he likes to put his name on everything.
But it's musical chairs too, right? Because once ExxonMobil's paid its way out, then it's Hurricane SBC, and then SBC pays its way out, and then it's who's going to get stuck with this thing when it finally hits.
I like that.
So you could actually up from a number of people who just want to be off the list.
It's like a cap and trade system.
Kind of.
All right.
Except that it neither caps nor trades, but otherwise.
If you have any suggestions on topics completely unrelated to education, send them to us at edexcellence. No, I'm sorry. Letters at edexcellence.net.
There you go.
Yeah. Sometimes we get mail.
Yeah, we do.
We like that. And sometimes we get tips from our readers.
Tips?
Yeah.
Hold on. You're not sharing the tips with me.
No, we did last time. Greg Toppa, remember, gave us a tip for
I thought you meant like somebody's like electronically transferring like $5.
Oh, no. Those kind of gratuities?
Tips, gratuities.
No, that is not happening.
Takes you back to the salad days, doesn't it?
Yes. And we don't take payola either, I want you to know. You know, I mean, if people tried to pay us to promote one of their reports, we would not take that money, would we?
Well, how much are we talking?
Yeah, there you go. All right, well, let's get started today with a game of Pardon the Gadfly. Then, we'll have our education news of the weird. And in between, we'll have an interview with Renee Islas.
Renee.
About the big no chalice behind
Do you know who else's name was Renee?
There's lots of Renees, right? Lots of women named Renee.
Are you thinking that there's another man named Renee?
Who's that?
Descartes.
There you go.
Descartes. Don't put Descartes before die horse. All right, let's play Pardon the Gadfly. Three topics for 90 seconds each. Christina is on vacation, so I'm going to have to settle for Kobe this week. Just kidding, Kobe. Glad to have you here.
Oh, God, Mike.
The problem is Kobe is the producer. He edits this thing, so he gets to take out snippets, make us sound good or bad.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Mm. Okay, Kobe, let's go.
Okay. A St. Petersburg Times columnist says that the way to fix low black achievement is for parents to, quote, stop trying to be their children's friends and start being parents and demand appropriate behavior and high expectations for respect and performance in school, end quote. Is changing black culture the answer? Is it doable?
Is that columnist? Is that our own Liam Julian?
No. This was a columnist. This was, what's his name? Liam?
Bill Maxwell.
Yeah.
Well, there's a couple things here. First, I think one of the challenges, it's incredibly difficult for a couple of white commentators to talk about black culture. I mean, it's incredibly difficult for black leaders to talk about black culture, you know. Mm-hmm. Witness the Bill Cosby kind of reception. For what it's worth, I mean, it strikes me this is an interesting critique. I mean, certainly... it doesn't strike me that the literature suggests that excessive friendship with your kids is a big problem in black culture. I think of this as more as kind of actually a middle class white cultural problem.
Like parents who are coddling their kids.
Parents of one child late in life. It's their pride and joy, and they really want to connect. It's an interesting kind of research question how much of this actually is going on and how it plays out in black versus white communities.
Okay, but this is certainly an issue raised a lot that, you know, why do we have this racial achievement gap? Jack O'Connell, a superintendent out in California, got a lot of press for simply saying that, boy, we have a gap and it's not just related to income. There really seems to be a racial achievement gap, and that was news to many people. And the question is why? And some people say, well, maybe it's a cultural issue. My beef with that argument, whether there's truth to it or not, and as you say, this is a very difficult issue to discuss, is what can we do about it? I mean, how do you change a culture? I would imagine that if that is possible, it takes years, if not decades. In the meantime, why don't we at least fix the schools that these kids go to and make sure that they have high expectations and are getting the job done?
I mean, you know, right. I mean, this is, you know, it's just so enormously difficult because if you want to talk, I mean, right, this is kind of the Obama, is he black enough question, right? I mean, the subtext there, is he black enough to talk as a black leader to, you know, to the fellow members of whatever the group is, however it's defined. And, you know, I mean, it's right. I mean, the bottom line is that there is very little that, you know, Latino or white or Asian leaders or commentators are going to be able to say, which is going to be taken as, you know, constructive or at face value when it talks about those issues.
Okay, Kobe, second question.
All right. Time magazine has a cover story this week about gifted kids and how they're not getting the educations they deserve. Are there merits to allowing gifted kids to skip a grade level or more? Is this a good strategy?
Yeah, I do think it's a good strategy. The cover article is interesting. It's not perfect. It you know, definitely is trying to make the case that gifted kids are being left behind, which I think the case can be made, although he cites some figures like, well, you know, federal funding for gifted education has gone from 11 million to 7 million. You know, like that, I mean, from a few pennies to a few less pennies. I mean, this is kind of a dumb argument. But he does a nice job profiling a new school out in Reno, Nevada, the Davidson Academy, which serves right now about 45 prodigies. I mean, these are super, 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 super smart kids who for the first time are getting to be challenged and pushed and really, you know, get challenged to their full potential. Previously, lots of these kids were very frustrated because they were in public school systems that would not allow them to skip more than a grade or two. And some of them needed to skip 3, 4, or 5 grades in order to be where they needed to be. I just don't quite understand the resistance the public education system has to doing that.
You know, I mean, as somebody who skipped a grade, I got to say, skipping a grade is not the optimal strategy for dealing with any of this, right? It's, I mean, the bigger problem here is that this is part of this conversation, right? We just have, right, for 20 years, we ignored a whole bunch of kids who were getting left behind. The kids we were just talking about in the last question, right? African-American kids, urban core kids, just wasn't on the radar. Then we kind of discovered these kids. And in our ingenious strategies for thoughtfully and appropriately dealing with these issues, we have become maddeningly obsessed with this proficiency bar. And for the last 10 years, it's been incredibly difficult to find somebody actually worrying about how do you serve kids who are at, you know, the upper end of the talent distribution? How do you challenge them? How do you give them, you know, lessons that are actually going to set them up to fulfill their potential? And, you know, and the answer, of course, is that skipping grades is a really lousy answer to how you help these kids fulfill their potential. Mm-hmm. Because the whole point is that there are some people who have so many natural gifts that the run-of-the-mill school system is probably not well configured for what they need. And so the real challenge is how do you set that stuff up? And that's just not been something that we've been thinking much about.
Well, Rick, some other time we'll have to talk about your experience skipping that grade.
Got beat up a lot, man. You know how much smaller you are when you go from, like, when you're 7, everybody else is like 9 or whatever it is. It's like, forget about it, Jimmy.
Whew, interesting. I never knew why you always got beat up all the time.
Well, that wasn't the only reason.
Okay.
But it did put me at a size disadvantage.
I bet it did. Kobe, number 3.
Can the education arena learn anything useful from the experience of the NYPD, which dramatically lowered crime rates by building a data-driven police force?
Wow. He sounds like one of those late night sex lines you get in New York City.
Is that what it is? I was going to say he's putting me to sleep.
You know, it's a
quiet storm.
Call Kobe.
You know, he used to be a DJ on a jazz program, wasn't he?
Really? Mm-hmm. I could hear that. Remember Venus Flytrap from WKRP in Cincinnati?
That was a bit before my time, I think.
That's sad. That's sad.
All right, Rick. So what about this answer? Shouldn't we, I mean, can't we learn a lot from New York City and broken windows and Comstat and all this stuff?
Yes. The short answer is yes. The actual answer is we will probably blow this just like we tend to blow these things. You know, part of the problem with educational leadership and reform has been the steadfast notion that education is somehow so unlike everything else that while the rest of the world has spent 50 or 60 years learning how do you manage better and how do you redesign organizations, education, we keep talking about schoolhouse leadership and instructional leadership like nothing applies. now, you know, Joe Murphy of Vanderbilt has written this, you know, useful book. And when he looks outside education, it looks at some examples. But instead of this just being part of a ongoing kind of widespread effort where we're constantly thinking about what applies and how it applies, is we're going to wind up with a whole bunch of people citing the example of the New York Stats program at a conference, saying, oh, we're going to adopt the Stats program, doing everything else exactly the way they've always done it, except now they're going to go ahead and spend $3 or $4 million taxpayer dollars designing a Stats program that they don't know how to use properly.
Right. I mean, it's always very superficial, right? We take, you know, we read Good to Great and we say, ah, we've got to get the right people on the bus. But when it actually comes to doing the hard work of, I don't know, changing teacher union contracts to make that happen. And by the way, I'm not talking about the school bus. I mean,
right,
you know,
right, right. No, no, that's right. Exactly right. So, you know, whether it's Jim Collins or Clay Christensen or all these guys who have these thoughtful, interesting things to say in kind of the larger discussion about management and reform, what we do is we bring them into education and we take the most impoverished, narrow reading of what they're talking about and we use that lingo. And so, you know, so the answer is we've got a bunch to learn from outside, but we've got to do it in a thoughtful way.
Well said, Rick. Well said. Well, that is all the time for Pardon the Gadfly. Thank you, Kobe, for your jazz-infused renderings of the questions. Now we have a special interview with Renee Islas about a big lawsuit filed this week around No Child Left Behind. Joining us today on the Education Gadfly Show is Renee Islas. Renee is now Vice President of BND Consulting, and Renee served in the Bush administration, as I did once upon a time. When he left the administration, he was the point person on teacher quality, and he's going to talk to us about a big teacher quality lawsuit that's been filed around No Child Left Behind this week. Renee, welcome to the show.
Good to be here, Mike.
Yeah. You know, Renee was one of the good guys in the administration, and it's too bad for them that you left, but it's nice to have you here on the outside.
Feels good to be out.
All right. Well, Renee, this week there was a big lawsuit filed by a group called Public Advocates, supposedly on behalf of parents and teachers and kids and so on and so forth. In my view, probably on behalf of education schools as well, that claimed that the Department of Education was not implementing its own law faithfully, that it was stretching the meaning of No Child Left Behind by creating a loophole for alternatively certified teachers. So that, in effect, they could be considered highly qualified as soon as they started teaching, even though they don't yet have certification. Did I explain that all pretty much correctly?
I believe that's correct, at least of what I've read of the lawsuit myself.
Okay. Well, let's get to, the kind of technical issue. What is their beef? What do they think the Department of Education did incorrectly and that they would like to be remedied?
Well, I believe there's some confusion as to how to interpret the statute, interpret the law, which says you can be highly qualified, determined highly qualified, if you have a bachelor's degree, demonstrated subject matter competency, and have full state certification, which could include alternative certification.
Mm-hmm.
However, there's a clause in the law that says that you cannot have any provisional certificates or waivers of any of the certificate rules. So there's some ambiguity there, and the U.S. Department of Education in 2002 regulated to clarify that, understanding that Congress was supportive of things such as Teach for America and Troops to Teachers, they did at that time include a regulation which said you could be considered fully certified if you were making successful progress through a alternative route to certification. So in other words, you could be teaching and receiving the training and induction that an alternative certification teacher traditionally does and be considered highly qualified at that time.
Okay. And it's important to note that as soon as the law was passed, it required that teachers in Title I schools had to be highly qualified immediately. So that meant that, for example, Teach for America teachers who are serving predominantly in Title I schools would not be able to do so because they would not have been certified yet, and therefore they wouldn't yet have been highly qualified. And yet this group seems to argue that the Department of Education regulation goes against congressional intent. At particular stake is the California intern program, Which is an alternative certification program. And that's been something that, that Congressman George Miller, who is the kind of the father of highly qualified teachers, has been concerned about. What was that about? You were in the middle of that when you were at the Department of Education.
Sure, and rightly so. He was concerned. Early on, California had a rule which allowed the folks on the intern certificate to be called highly qualified. However, at that time in 2002, 2003, the rules stated in California that an intern could be an intern without demonstrating subject matter competency. And so Mr. Miller called that to our attention at the time, and we did call the state to action and say, okay, be serious here. A teacher is not highly qualified in terms of No Child Left Behind's definition, nor your definition, if they cannot demonstrate the subject that they teach.
Okay, so in other words, they had to pass a test of subject matter knowledge before they would be allowed to enter the classroom, even though they would still have some time while teaching to earn their certification.
Correct.
All right. So now let's talk about consequences here. If this lawsuit somehow prevails, if they're able to convince a judge that the Department of Education stretched the law inappropriately, what are the consequences? What are we likely to see?
Well, I think it could have a negative impact on alternative certification, but I also think that people see the value in alternative certification enough to find another loophole of their own. You can shift... automatically give an alternative certification teacher who's accepted into a program full state certification and then put them through an induction program. But I hate to see that type of gaming happen. But it is possible, and I think as some experts have said out there, the demand is there for alternative certification teachers that go through alternative certification, so it will persist in one way or another.
Okay, well, that's very interesting. I'm a little more concerned maybe than you are that this could really be a death knell for some of these better alt cert programs. Not that all of them are great, but for programs like Teach for America that recruit fantastic people into high need classrooms, this could be just yet one more barrier to helping them do what they want to do to help students. So that could be a real shame, but. Renee, I will take your more positive perspective and hope that you're right. Well, good. Well, Renee, thanks for coming on the show today, and we'll watch as this lawsuit progresses over the next few months.
Well, thank you, Mike.
Okay. So what do you think, Rick? What's your take on this lawsuit? They believe that No Child Left Behind never gave the authority to allow teachers coming through these alternate routes to be considered highly qualified.
I think... the answers, I think you pointed out in a Gadfly piece or a forthcoming Gadfly piece, is the law, as we know, is incredibly ambiguous on exactly this count. The fact is, of course, that the this piece of the statute was famously handed off to George Miller to focus on. And Miller's emphasis was always in this opportunity to learn standard, raising the expectation for teacher quality through kind of input metrics. So, this really is a problem. The administration has, I think, interpreted this to its credit in a way that has created as much room as possible for interesting and important innovations.
Mm-hmm.
How this is going to play out if this case actually moves forward is, an open question.
As much room as possible. I don't think that the ed schools and others really like that.
You think?
I think so.
Actually, the more significant question here is if say it's a Clinton administration in 2009,
mm-hmm.
Is how the entire teacher quality provision will then, if reauthorization hasn't happened,
yep.
how that will play out,
yep.
and how it will be Absolutely. Interpreted.
All right. Well, enough serious, wonky, boring stuff. It's
yes.
that special time. That time we love education news of the weird time with our special correspondent, Liam Julian. Liam, what is weird this week?
The Olympics will be in Beijing next summer, and the Chinese government is getting ready. According to China Daily Newspaper, approximately 400 million young people in more than 400,000 schools across the country will receive, quote, Olympic education before the 2008 Games. Integrating Olympic education into the schools is a multifaceted process. A series of textbooks has been created, which will introduce Chinese students to the history of the Olympic Games, the various Olympic sports and the rules of play, Olympic symbols, and the role of the Olympic movement as a contributor to international peace and friendship. Since the launch of the program in 2005, 556 elementary and secondary schools have been officially recognized as, quote, Olympic education model schools, unquote. Only those which set the best examples in providing Olympic education to their young pupils will earn this designation. Rick, what do you think about human rights and lead-infused Barbie dolls?
I'm in favor of human rights, and I'm opposed to lead-infused Barbie dolls. Petrilli, how about you?
See, Rick, I think this show's been good for you because I feel like you've really gotten more on message over time.
Thank you.
I feel like a year ago, you might have come out in favor of lead-infused Barbie dolls.
I focus, baby. But, I you want know, focus.
That witty question Liam asked was trying to get us away from the fact that that wasn't that weird. I mean, what's weird about this, Liam?
A national curriculum of Olympic education?
All right, I guess. That's true.
Seems odd.
I got to say, the rules of play part is weird. I mean, because there's what? There's dozens of, like, Summer Olympic sports, including, like, what's that one where they got to run and shoot by a biathlon?
Oh, yeah.
Like,
do they run and shoot? I thought that's a winter sport where they ski and shoot.
But is there, or the summer, at least you got, like, the pentathlon, right? Mm-hmm. You got to ride horses and... Like, do you test the kids
in the pentathlon?
Yeah.
With a javelin?
No, that's the decathlon, fool. That's a Bruce Jenner one.
No, but the pentathlon, I mean, it's still a track and field event.
No. The pentathlon's like this a series of skills that were required for Greek war making. It was like, it's like shooting your rifle.
Okay.
It's like, or it's like a British modification of. Google it, big guy. Google it right now. Okay. I want some verification on my pentathlon insight.
All right. Well, I see, Liam. It is a little bit strange, but maybe this is a good thing. We're worried about China beating us in math and science. So, hey, they can take their time studying about the Olympics instead. Mm-hmm. This is good for America.
Mm-hmm.
All right. That's all the time we've got. Thanks for listening. Until next week.
Hold on, Kobe. Am I right? Yeah, huh?
All right. Rick was right.
Till next week.
Rick was right.
And I was right.
And Rick was right. And I'm Mike. What's my name? Mike Petrilli, the Thomas D. Fordham Foundation, signing off.